wealthy enough to own a home,
sometimes
to own a vehicle.
Sometimes people feel shy that what if I try to avoid a set-off and people think, oh my God, she
oh, the
or
class,
he doesn't have
the
enough
poshness,
money. Yeah,
the class.
Yeah, exactly. What if they think low of me or they feel like I'm hurting my own face in the world, in the society? So it is not like this as well. We have the opportunity. People might have, might be even richer than us. But still, they know that as Muslims, they are recommended to keep this idea in mind. Well, let's go for a short break, and then we're going to talk about the other perspectives to this throwaway culture.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
All right, so we're back with the Youth Station, and you're listening to the Youth Station, and we're talking about the disposable culture. And I think it's not bad that we touch on the practical takeaways from the episodes that we had so far about the throwaway culture.
Yeah.
How in our day-to-day life are we supposed to draw the line between throwing something and keeping something? I think one of the most important things that we should do is think before doing something. Think before keeping or disposing. Ask yourself, am I setting a boundary here? Have I reached that limit? Or am I just, you know, dodging my growth? Am I just saying, it's more comfortable this way? Think, are you buying this phone because you really need it? That your phone is broken? That your phone does not meet your needs? It's slow enough that it's not working anymore? Or is it because there is another model that is bigger, that is higher than this one?
I have to keep the luxury.
Exactly. Are you, God forbid, you're going towards divorce? Why are you divorcing? Are you divorcing this person because really you have met the conclusion that this relationship is not going to work out?
Or you're just being impatient.
Yeah, you're just being impatient. Can you repair this relationship? Can you repair the hearts of the people? That's extremely important. I think this is the first step. Think. Keep thinking before. And how many times, just like the story I mentioned about the tissue papers, we just, without thinking, subconsciously, we just pick the tissue papers from that, you know, damn roll, and we just use it, and we just throw away the papers just because they're wet. My mother, now I remember, again, another story from the tissue papers. I can probably give you stories until the night. My mother, she would, whenever we use tissue papers and they're not like dirty, just because we washed our hands, we want to dry them off, she would tell us to put it in a specific basket. We had a small basket in our kitchen counter. She would ask us to put it there. And then what she would do is, when it's there, it slowly kind of dries off, right? That tissue paper. She would reuse those tissue papers for what? For cleaning the countertops.
Oh.
Now imagine
so
this
thoughtful.
Culture. Tissue, they're very invaluable. You can easily buy them. What's the big thing about getting new tissue paper? But she would still reuse these papers to, you know, although we were not in a poor family. You know, we had an abundance
For sure.
At least I can tell you for tissue papers, we had abundance of that. Maybe we might not have many other privileges that others might have.
But this is the Islamic culture that is teaching us.
Exactly. So before doing many of these actions, because we're not thinking about it. When we are, you know, scrolling these tissue papers in our hands, not because we don't want to do, we want to do israf, it's because we're not thinking about them.
Right.
Think about it. Maybe take one step. When you're upgrading something, your vehicle, your home, think about it. Is this necessary? Is this going to really bring you growth in life? Or is it just because of for the sake of upgrading? The previous thing you're throwing away.
Yeah, I think these questions will stop and avoid many of the israf that we can see today.
I can remember.
Once we start thinking and rethinking
exactly.
The way we're living.
I can remember I had a neighbor, right? He was upgrading his fridge. And his fridge, by the way, was a big fridge. And he was upgrading to a double-door fridge. And he was an elderly person, and we were just talking casually. And then I asked him, why are you upgrading? And he was like, you know what? I never really give a thought. I'm just upgrading. He didn't even think about
more
upgrading.
Classy.
Exactly. So I think it's important thinking. And the second step is maybe see if you can repair those things, whether it be a person or a thing. If it's an object, see if you can fix it, if you can reuse it, or even donate it. Maybe, it's a very common phrase, proverb, one man's trash is another man's trash is another man's treasure. you might not find value in what you have, but someone else might use it and make something valuable out of it.
Yeah,
see if you can donate it.
This is really helpful. I mean, I usually, because I have to go to different workplaces, I buy lots of clothes. Until I was younger, I had this problem with my parents, that they were always asking me, why do you keep lots of clothes? Why do you buy a lot? And then I started from some time, like from a few years ago, to start donating the ones that I don't, like I had lots of clothes that I wouldn't even wear them. I bought them, then I came home, I regret it, so I just put them away. So this donation, this idea, this, okay, if you're young, you want to buy lots of things, maybe you have a favorite thing, be it watch, I don't know, whatever thing, clothes, books even, the things that you love, and you go buy them a lot, though you have to be thinking about them. But if you have this habit, this tendency, you love to buy something, then keep thinking of donation.
Yeah.
What if another person can be benefited from it?
And these are about objects. What about people? Talk, clarify, give them a chance. Your parent, your child does something wrong, give it a chance. Your spouse does something wrong, give it a chance. Give him or her a chance. Maybe they might improve. Your parent, your parents, right? They do something wrong. Talk and clarify. Don't be aggressive and be like, I'm not going to come back to your home
and
anymore.
Sometimes even just listen to them.
Sit on a dinner table and talk together about something, about life, man. It's much bigger than that.
Yeah.
God Almighty is not asking you to debate with your family about your religious affairs. Sit down and have a dinner with them. Have a lunch with them. At least you can keep this much of a relationship together. Online, don't argue just to win. This is a very important thing. You don't need to press your thoughts to someone until they accept it. If you think they're not accepting, if you think they're stubborn enough, fine, move on.
And there's no end to this kind of discussion.
Exactly. Be slow to delete human beings. Don't be, okay, this guy is like that, I mean, just move on. I don't like it. No. Think about it. And I think these are, you know, maybe maturity is knowing what to let go of quickly and what deserves repair.
Exactly.
I think this is maturity. And I believe I've had a lot of experience in this arena, both positive and negative. And well, experiences are just experiences, but they have given me lessons. And from disposable culture, and I'm one of the persons who was brought up in a disposable culture. And drawing these boundary lines is, I think, extremely important.
Well, with the wishes that this disposable mindset, this throwaway culture, can be controlled in the minds of all our listeners and in the minds of young people around the world. Let's end today's episode. We wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
Discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
for joining us. Hebrew media, through its commentators and analysts, has discussed the Sydney attack against the Jewish holiday celebration, the complications facing the second phase of the Gaza agreement, the settlement movement in the Strip, the anticipated meeting between Trump and Netanyahu, and the Israeli escalation against Syria and Lebanon. These topics will be the center of discussion in today's episode with Mr. Ridwan Rizq, political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome,
Good
Mr.
Morning.
Ridwan. The Sydney attack, in which 16 people were killed and which targeted a gathering celebrating the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah, received significant attention in Hebrew media, reflecting the horror and magnitude of the operation. How can the Israeli political exploitation of the Sydney attack be understood today, Mr. Ridwan, and also the campaign that is launched, whether by politicians or even security officials, against the Australian authorities, accusing them of negligence towards the Jews?
Well, this is not true at all, because my personal information about the center that was attacked was one of the major, the main center of the Jewish community in Australia, and that has played a very important role in gathering or collecting, you know, fundraising for the IDF in Israel. And at the same time, that the influence of this center on the Australian politicians and political life is so effective, and so goes back a long time in the Australian life. This is not the main question. The main question is to be raised and asked that some of the information were leaked about the attackers. One of them was served during Gaza war in the IDF forces against Gaza. Despite the, his nationality, if he's Australian or from Pakistani's origin, why was he serving in the IDF during Gaza war? Why did he do this attack? I believe the you know the answer about the, these questions, because the you know the main public opinion in Australia has turned against the Israelis,
and that's why Netanyahu faced the accusations directly to the Australian authorities.
Exactly, so that he is trying to defend or to gain back that's the Australian public opinion to support the IDF or the Israeli government in its acts, genocides in Gaza, because Australians mainly are peaceful people. They are a bit far from what's going around the world. They don't know much about the situation in the Middle East, but you know the massacre that's committed by the Israelis in Gaza,
yes,
that had turned the Australian public opinion against the story of the Jewish or the Israeli government.
So you don't agree that what happened will actually be a major shift in global opinion towards the Israelis?
Well, this is maybe this is one of the main targets that that's, you know, trying the Israelis are trying to use,
exploiting,
and you know showing exposing themselves as being
victims.
The victims of the these kinds of acts. I can clearly accuse that the Mossad Israelis are behind this massacre, despite the lives of the, you know, lost in the Jewish community.
You mean they were aware of it, or they are behind it?
It's they are behind it, because if we recall back the assassination of the Israeli ambassador in London in 1982. That was used and is accused to launch a major attack of the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. So we are seeing now the similar scenario, the similar stories, which you know Israel is used to use. Despite that, they are not aware. They are aware, and they are willing to sacrifice few Jewish lives just to gain back what they have lost of the Gaza.
But why choose Australia?
Australia, because for so many reasons, I believe, and it could be somewhere else also. We are going to see some similar acts around the world. Australia, because no, you know, the security tightness is a bit loose there, because, you know, crimes there is very low. People and armed control is very tight. So many people cannot just go and buy arms from the shop as in America. And those arms that they have been used by the attackers were not licensed. And they are not fully automatic. They are semi-automatic rifles. And that's why we can we see that the arms they have used did not cause many more casualties. Otherwise, we could have seen much more and many more casualties among the
Do you actually think that Netanyahu might exploit also the Sydney attack to carry out military adventures in the region?
This is the main reason. I think that Netanyahu is trying to find an excuse to launch a major invasion against Lebanon.
And use the Australian attack as a pretext? How do you link it?
This is it's very linked because now that he thinks that he will have the full support of the Western world again by exposing them, the Jewish, as the targets or the civilians, Jewish in Australia and elsewhere as victims.
Okay, so a very important factor also here is that they also accused Iran. Though Iran declined any accusation, they accused of involvement in the attack despite Tehran's condemnation of it. Would they use it as a pretext to launch a war against Iran specifically?
This is the main purpose because even the mayor of Sydney City was, announced that accused some accusations of Iran. Launched this accusations even before the investigations took place in after the the attack in Sydney. So this is they are trying together all purpose and all means to justify their attacks or launching a major war against Iran and Lebanon.
Okay. Hebrew media also reports have revealed that Tel Aviv is still refusing to begin the second phase before the handover of the body of the last Israeli captive in the Gaza Strip. Do you think that Netanyahu will oppose Trump's idea that was actually conveyed by his own convoy in the United Nations, Mike Waltz, calling to move to the second phase even if the Israeli captive's body is not returned?
Well, before that, Netanyahu, trying to show himself in front of the Israelis or the world that he is so keen on the lives or gaining the body of one of the captives, he should remember that by activating Hannibal Protocol was responsible for the killing of all the captives, because all the captives were killed by Israeli air raids. And that was led to almost kill about 80% of the captives. So now he is showing full responsibility and so keen on gaining back the body of one captive remained in
But Trump
in Gaza.
Opposes that. But, yeah, so what will happen?
I think that, we cannot predict. I think that Netanyahu Trump meeting on the 29th of this month will show that who is more powerful in the decisions in that matter. I believe that Netanyahu...
But before that time, Netanyahu will not move with the plan.
I don't think so at all. And I think that Netanyahu is going to America on the 29th to get the or to tell or to inform Trump about his next invasion of Lebanon and taking over or invading the whole Gaza, igniting another war in Gaza also. So, and I think that Netanyahu will succeed in that, and I don't think that Trump will be able to stop him at all, because I believe that Netanyahu is much more powerful in America than Trump himself.
What if the body of the captive killed in Gaza, the Israeli captive, was not found?
Well, there's a very high possibility that they will not be able to find him, even if they want to. So, and I think that Hamas and Islamic Jihad want to find this body, But due to the fact that 10,000 people are still missing in Gaza, it's not only a matter of one captive. 10,000 people still considered missing under the rebels of the air raid of, you know, committed by the Israeli Air Force. So how can they, how can, if they are, it's very similar that you are just searching for a needle in a trash camp in this way. So
you think that Netanyahu is using this as a pretext?
Of course.
Hamas not finding the body of the captive that was killed by the Israeli shelling?
That was killed by the Israeli shelling, and maybe this one of the attacks could have, you know, shattered even the body. They cannot find even the full body of a captive. And that's happened because the Palestinians were buried their dead by, you know, pieces of bodies, and not even knowing those pieces to which person, you know, belongs. So they cannot be sure if they found a part of the body, they cannot be sure if it's for the captives or not, because what we know that most of the guard who are armed Hamas or Jihad were guarding those captives. They were killed along with the air raids also. So we don't know what's happened.
So what's Netanyahu's intention, in your opinion?
He is trying his best and desperate to find any excuse
to go back to war
and to continue his plan in the region.
Will he succeed in doing that?
Of course, he will.
Even if Trump opposes him?
Doesn't matter. Trump opposition for the war in the region will not be that effective on Netanyahu.
Okay, we remain in the Gaza Strip, where one of the leaders of the settler movement revealed that dozens of settlers managed to enter Gaza's territory in order to settle there, and remained inside for more than an hour and a half before the occupation army forced them out. What are the implications of this settler activity?
Well, we must look at it in from all different angles, because we are seeing settlers not only entering Gaza. We have seen settlers entering southern Lebanon, and they are trying to start building settlements there. And southern Syria also, they have, took some points where to build settlements also. So we are dealing here with the doctrine of the Zionism, which is, you know, encourage the Jewish people or the racist Jewish people to believe that they have the right to go anywhere they want in their promised land. So they consider it as their promised land, and it was backed up by being financed by the settlements organizations, and nothing that will stop them at the end if they don't come to a point where they know that they are not allowed to go into other territories. They are already occupiers of Palestine,
okay.
And now they want to.
But how would such provocative acts affect the implications of the second phase of the Gaza Agreement?
I'm not so promised that the second phase will take place in Gaza, that will not be implemented at all, because I believe that the war did not stop and the killing did not stop, and more air raid yesterday or the day before, they have assassinated one of the Hamas leaders, Ra'ed Isa, and we know that assassinations also continuing in southern Lebanon. Now we are seeing some checkpoints in southern Syria, inside southern Syria, and where they come very close to the Syrian civil people,
yes.
And they have crossed those checkpoints. So I think this is an invasion all over Gaza, southern Lebanon, and southern Syria.
Okay, the anticipated meeting, however, between Trump and Netanyahu in Florida later this month is a major topic of discussion in Hebrew media. as it will discuss all the major regional files, according to a former official in the Zionist National Security Council. What do you expect to come out of the Trump-Netanyahu meeting that's expected in Florida?
Well, I think that's the main purpose behind the Netanyahu visit to America is to inform Trump of his next move and next plan. And I think that we are going to see some escalations in the situation all over the Middle East.
But Trump is the one that called Netanyahu to come.
Trump is in a very squeezed situation because now we are seeing more and more support of Israel among the Congress, and we have seen and watched that one of the congressmen was threatening people or congressmen, other congressmen, from taking any actions against Israel. And that was his threatening in the meaning of threatening their life and their political future or political career. So now it's so obvious that there's a struggle going among the American people, and I think that the Zionist lobby, due to the power of AIPAC and other organizations,
yes,
has lots of power to pressure the President Trump and the White House himself. Because
the power is diminishing, especially after the latest global attack against Israel.
Exactly. So now they are I think they are desperately fighting to keep the American government under the main influence of the American situation to fully support of the Israeli government, because the Israeli government are aware that the public opinion in America is shifting away from full support of Israel.
Okay, but do you think that Trump and Netanyahu see eye to eye on Iran?
Well, I don't think so, because America is trying to avoid into going in a direct confrontation with Iran, because they know that their benefits in the region will be affected so much, especially if the Gulf countries are involved in the attack against Iran. And I think that Iran is not Ukraine, it's not Iraq. Iran is totally a different story, and the Americans are aware that it's going to be a very costly war.
So will this prevent Israel from attacking? Unilateral act, probably.
Maybe, because the Americans have no wish or no will to go into a major war against Iran, because not because of the benefit of Iran, but because they know that the Iran capability on occurring mass destructions to the Israelis, and the Americans in this way, especially Trump and his administration, are trying to protect Israel from itself.
Will they win or succeed in that?
They will try to.
Obviously, they
will
cannot
try
their actions.
They will try to convince Netanyahu that's not on his benefits to start a major war with Iran. They are trying to protect the Israeli from the madness of Netanyahu. I don't think. I doubt that they will succeed in that. But I believe they will try their best.
Okay, Mr. Redouan Rezek, political analyst. Thank you very much for joining us in today's episode. It was really nice having you with us on
the
show.
Thanks a lot.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
Here's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be here with you guys. And welcome to today's brand new episode of Back to Reality. Well, so just like always, we have two very dear guests, and I enjoy their company. So just like always, you have to give us a very brief introduction about yourself. Therefore, assalamu alaikum and welcome. Let's start with ladies. Sister Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me. I am Zainab and glad to be here. I am a student of linguistics and at the same time have an exposure in the halls of studies.
Thank you very much for coming here. And you, Brother Muhammad, assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam. It's a pleasure to be here with you again. My name is Muhammad. I'm a Quran student and a Quran teacher, and I've studied English literature, but mostly I'm interested in Quranic studies.
There are some times in life in which we get to think about the disabled people, and then if one of these disabled people is among your relatives, and if one of them is among your family, then the story would get really, really complicated and very, sometimes very tragic and bitter in essence. To the point that you would come to question even the sort of relationship God has got with these sort of people. So why, for example, my uncle is to be punished this way, having a child who's disabled? Why my friend is being punished? And sometimes why me? Why am I the one who's been punished by, for example, this child, or even me being disabled after a certain age, for example? There are many people who are so normal, like the ordinary people, but suddenly they would lose their eyesight. Suddenly they would be paralyzed. All of these things are possible in life. So how do you justify these occasions? Like when you see such stuff, do you call it punishment, or do you put it in a different way that makes it really a bit understandable?
You see, it could go both ways. It could be like something that you've done and it's a punishment. Or sometimes it's like it's not in your control at all. It's something that you had no control over. So when it's like this, when it's something that you have had no control over, then it becomes a means of test, a divine test.
Yeah.
So when Allah, for example, gives a person a disabled child, or a person themselves are disabled, it's a test from Allah to see if that person still thanks Allah or doesn't. Does that person still say, okay, thank Allah, I have, I don't know, if they can see, they say, thanks to Allah, I can see. Even if I can't hear, I can see. Or if they don't have like arms, at least they have legs, which they can walk using them.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a means of test. We can't really say whether it's really due to punishment, because we have a verse in the Quran, "Ma asabakum min musibatin famin anfusikum,"
which means,
yeah, whatever harm comes to us, it is because of our own actions, our own deeds. And whatever good comes to us is from Allah.
Yeah.
Because everything is a test.
Exactly.
Whether we have done it ourselves, or Allah has caused that to happen to us, or in any situation, our life is a test.
Just as brother mentioned this verse, I remember something that we had a discussion on this at school, and I remember my friend's ideas on this. And then I guess if you don't have a profound understanding of it, or the best reading of it, then it might be a source of misunderstanding, like our understanding, not the verse. The problem is within us.
Yeah.
If you say someone with a disabled child this verse, and then they start thinking, they would say that, okay, what have I done in my life? I've never killed anyone. I've never done massacres. I've never been into any wrongdoing to other people. I have never done that. Why do I have to suffer such a thing?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
I think here a believer needs to shift their focus from questioning this trial, which is known as ibtila in Quran, because Quran affirms these kind of tests as a divine norm and calls them trials, and they are not necessarily punishments. They are, they can be a signs of Allah's love, rather, to increase your rank, increase your spiritual rank, increase the spiritual rank of that person who is suffering, right? In fact, Quran tells that, and we will surely test you with something of fear and hunger and loss of wealth and lives and fruits, but give glad tidings to the patient. So Quran tells us already that you're going to go through trials, but what is your weapon here? It's patience, right?
Yeah. And the verse, by the way, was ما أصابك من حسناتٍ فمن الله وما أصابك من سيئةٍ فمن نفسك وأرسلناك للناس رسولاً وكفى بالله شهيدا. But as the sister said, the other verse is a lot more important, the one about having patience and how we are being tested by
by the hurricanes
of
life.
Loss of lives, loss of money, loss of children.
Different kind of trials.
Loss
different
of health,
trials,
everything.
وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الْخَوْفِ وَالْجُوعِ وَنَقْصٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَنفُسِ وَالثَّمَرَاتِ وَبَشِّرِ الصَّابِرِينَ الَّذِينَ إِذَا أَصَابَتْهُمْ مُصِيبَةٌ قَالُوا إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ.
Yeah, which is the translation of what the sister was just talking about.
Right. Alhamdulillah, we are here with a Quranic teacher today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're having this.
We're assisted with the verses
around.
My pleasure.
So, also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that the believer is always in one of the three states, either in a blessing for which he must be grateful, or in an affliction for which he must be patient, or in a sin for which he must be seeking forgiveness. So, you know, we are in either of these states. I personally have been there.
So see in which category you belong.
Yeah, you have to see. I think I personally have been there. Like, I remember before my father left for the eternal abode, he met an accident a couple of years ago, and then it was a very severe kind of accident wherein he, you know, one of his hip joints got broken and he was unable to walk properly.
Yeah.
And then I see him and I keep on saying that, why my father? Why us? Why our family? And like, because we already didn't have any brother, and, you know, men-wise, we were in very much need. So I was like, why? So all of a sudden I see a young boy coming behind my father who had no legs at all. And at the same time, like, I repented to God that at least my father is having, his one leg is proper, only his one leg is injured, and maybe this will also get fixed by time. So, you know, when we say, why me, why my family, we are indirectly saying, why not someone else? And this is extreme selfishness.
Yeah. And besides that, I think when we look at Zainab al-Kubra, and how in the court of Yazid, she was asked, oh, what happened? Look what we did to you. What did she say? She said, مَا رَأَيْتُ إِلَّا جَمِيلًا. مَا رَأَيْتُ إِلَّا جَمِيلًا. What does that mean? Even though she went through all those hardships, she had to endure all the patience, and her brother was slaughtered, her nephews were killed in front of her eyes, she still said, مَا رَأَيْتُ إِلَّا جَمِيلًا. Everything that exists in this world, whatever we can see, is beautiful. If we think the same way as Sayyida Zainab, sallallahu alayhi wa.
And that was a worst case
everything
scenario.
Everything is beautiful.
Yeah.
And really is. No matter, even if you lose all of your loved ones,
yeah,
life is still beautiful. مَا رَأَيْتُ إِلَّا جَمِيلًا. Why did she say that? Because what the fruit of Imam Hussein's revolution was he was the savior of Islam. He saved Islam. Islam was being destroyed. And Imam Hussein, through his sacrifice, and later Sayyidah Zainab, through her mission, which was conveying the message of Karbala to people, they saved Islam. They came to the rescue, and everything is beautiful. So we shouldn't, even if we have a disabled child, we should not say, "Oh Allah, why did you do this to me?
Why is it easier said than done. In practice, things are very difficult because I have seen it with my eyes, like from our relatives. I have seen a family suffering.
You know why you think it's easier said than done? Because when we are in that situation, actually, we see only ourselves. We don't see others. We have this very line in Urdu, which means, "Dunya mein kitna gham hai, mera gham kitna kam hai." How much trouble, affliction is there in the world?
Mine is the slightest affliction
in compared to this affliction. So, you know, because we don't compare our afflictions with the afflictions of others. There are definitely people who are living in worst-case scenario.
And we've been told to always look at those who are below you.
In Islam, you're not allowed to compare yourself.
So, if you have a disabled child, God forbid,
there are people
try
who don't
to
have
look
a child
at someone
at all.
Who does not even have a child.
Yeah.
Exactly. There are people who are barren, women who can't bear children, who can't conceive. Look at them.
And okay. I had one of the classmates who had disabled parents, not one parent, but both of the parents.
Wow.
And, you know, once we went to their home to take the notes and all, and the moment we realized how they are conversating with their parents, it was really hard. And, like, we were like, okay, my father's only a bit disabled. Look at them. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't compare those afflictions. You don't see the afflictions of others compared to yours, so
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we should.
Well,
not above you.
The ones below you.
Yeah.
You said that you must compare yourself to the ones below you, but I guess nowadays, because of media, you have the success to the people who are above you. So unconsciously or subconsciously, what happens is that you would compare yourself to the ones with more blessings. So
it's inevitable. I agree with that.
It happens.
I know that people, we shouldn't do that, but it happens, inevitably happens. You know,
in the realm of
angels, if God forbid someone has a disabled child, they will inevitably look at those who have healthy children.
Not just healthy children, a healthy life.
They seem very happy.
But the thing is, they should say, "Okay, Allah, I'll be patient. I'll exercise patience, and I will submit to you, oh Allah." They should say that. They shouldn't be like, they shouldn't start complaining and saying, "Why, Allah? Why did you do this? Why did you give me such a child? Why me?" So this is where Allah tests them.
Yeah.
Okay. So they, instead of complaining, they should say, "Oh Allah,
seek the wisdom behind."
And by the way, I've got something. Seeing these people, I've learned something, which is, even before the problem that they will encounter in their life and which is distant for them, they get the capacity.
Yeah.
The capacity comes before you get into that problem.
Yes,
like
exactly.
There are many occasions in my own life that I would have never thought I would have bear it.
Yeah.
I would have never tolerated. But then after I got into that certain phase, yes, I didn't. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
But then there comes a patience with it, which is the act of God, actually. So I hope life would get easier on everyone out there, and I hope that we will be patient enough to tolerate all the difficulties that get in the middle of our life. And with all the difficulties, we have to seek refuge to God, because He Himself alone is going to be the only protector and the only supporter. So thank you for staying with us until another episode. Take care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin. care once again.
Best parts, impactful dialogues
from the most influential movies of the world.
The 2009 film Angels and Demons is a mystery thriller directed by Ron Howard and based on the novel by Dan Brown. It stars Tom Hanks as Robert Langdon, symbologist, and is considered the first adventure film after the Da Vinci Code. The movie's premise involves religious themes and symbols aligning with the Brown's characteristic style. Robert, a symbologist, tries his best to stop a secret society from destroying Vatican City. He seeks to decipher various clues in the process, most of which led him to the four altars of science. Now, let's take a listen to a part of this movie.
A swim might help your jet lag.
I beg your pardon?
No bags under your eyes. It's 5 a.m. and you're from the Vatican. Cross keys under the triregnum. It's a papal symbol.
Claudio Vincenzi, Corpo della Gendarmeria Vaticano.
Vatican police? I was expecting another letter. My request for access to your archives. Shouldn't you be in Rome? busy time for you guys.
In fact, I was in New York, detailed to the UN. I received a phone call in the middle of the night, find Professor Robert Lyman, a matter of great urgency. They said, to show you this. The Illuminati, they disappeared hundreds of years ago.
Did they? Look at that again. It's an ambigram. It's the same image, forward and backward. Now, that's common for a symbol like a yin and yang or a swastika, but that's a word. That Illuminati ambigrammatic symbol has been considered a myth for 400 years. Supposedly in the 16th century, some artist created it as a tribute to Galileo's love of symmetry. It was only going to be revealed when the Illuminati had amassed enough power to resurface and carry out their final goal. I wrote a book about it. Which is why you're here.
The Art of the Illuminati by Robert Langdon.
Part one. Haven't been able to finish part two because I'm not allowed access to your archives. It's remarkable. Singular. Someone is trying to make you believe the Illuminati themselves have returned to Rome right after the death of a pope.
Four cardinals were kidnapped from their quarters inside the Vatican sometime between 3 and 5 a.m. this morning. Shortly afterward, that document was sent to the office of the Swiss Guard, along with the threat the cardinals will be publicly executed one per hour beginning at 8 p.m. tonight in Rome. To begin today, we've postponed his start for a few hours, a story of illness. There are no suspicions yet.
What do you want from me?
These criminals who sent this ambigram meant it as a taunt, a provocation. But Captain Olivetti think if you can use it to learn their identity, perhaps we can stop this abomination.
Why me?
Your expertise, your erudition, your recent involvement with certain church, shall we say, mysteries?
I wasn't under the impression that episode had endeared me to the Vatican.
Oh, it didn't. But it did make you formidable.
Formidable?
A Vatican jet is standing by 20 minutes from here. Will you come with me? Professor Lang, you spent your life searching for symbols like the one you now hold in your hand. How much longer are we going to pretend you have not already decided to come?
If the Illuminati have returned and are in Rome, we will hunt them down and kill them.
The Illuminati did not become violent until the 17th century. Their name means the Enlightened. They were physicists, mathematicians, astronomers. They were concerned with the church's inaccurate teaching, and they were dedicated to scientific truth. The Vatican didn't like that. So the church began to, how did you say it? Oh, hunt them down and kill them. Drove them underground into a secret society.
Listening to a part of the movie Angels and Demons, directed by Ron Howard, released in 2009.
Good evening to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Very nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's programs with our news bulletin that will be followed by today's special daily mix format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Our radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel carries out fresh attacks in Gaza in violation of a ceasefire, and while the Palestinian territory is reeling from a humanitarian crisis. The UK unemployment rate has risen above 5%, with young Brits bearing the brunt of job cuts. And U.S. President Donald Trump sues BBC over edited clips of a speech that he made back in January of 2021. Thank you for joining us here on World News. Our top story: repeated Israeli violations and harsh humanitarian conditions. This is a summary of what Palestinians are enduring in Gaza, where a ceasefire was supposed to put an end to regime's attacks. Israeli forces have shelled locations near the Al Buraj refugee camp in central Gaza. Fresh airstrikes hit Gaza City's Al-Tufa district as well. Attacks come as Gaza saw heavy rains once again, while still reeling from the consequences of Storm Byron, which battered the strip for days. According to Gaza's self-defense, 90% of tents have been completely flooded in Gaza City's Sheikh Radwan neighborhood. Fear is also widespread among Palestinians over the collapse of buildings as a result of the heavy rains.